What does it mean to be a Western yogi? How can someone who was born and raised in the West, who comes from a Judeo-Christian background, practice yoga and meditation in an authentic and genuine way? My name is Christopher Sartain, and this is the Western Yoga Podcast. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Western Yoga Podcast. I'm here at our retreat center in southern Chile, enjoying the fall weather and the colors. The leaves are beginning to change, and it's really beautiful here in our little valley, in our little nook of the Andes Mountains. I'm currently offering a breathwork course in Spanish for Spanish speakers online, and it's going fairly well. I have 22 people in the course right now, and so I'm really happy about that, and I'm training them to become breathwork therapists or breathwork facilitators, and so I'm really happy about that. And we've got our nephew here helping out, and he'll be staying here this winter and taking care of the place for us as we travel a bit and escape the harsh winter months, at least 2 months. Today I want to talk about the importance of retreats, the importance of spiritual retreats or meditation retreats. In our current yuga, or era, if you want to learn more about the yugas, you should listen to the previous episode. Also recommend to read the book The Yugas by Joseph Selby. It will be one of the most important books you've ever read. I know that fewer and fewer folks are reading books these days, but I do highly recommend to purchase that book and read it. Take some time and sit down and read. Educate yourself about the history of the planet, the real history of the planet, not what they teach you in schools and universities. It will be very, very beneficial for you. Also read Sri Yukteswar's book, The Holy Science. It's a very short book where he discusses the yugas, but that book, The Yugas by Joseph Selby, goes into great depth and detail regarding the time cycles, the planetary astrological cycles. During our current yuga, we are still feeling the after effects of Kali Yuga, which is the material age or the dark age. And our planet is still currently run by people that belong to a scientific materialist cult. And it is a cult. They have very strict, rigid beliefs. If you step out of line, or you rebel in any way against those beliefs, you are ostracized. And it really has all the telltale signs of being a cult. And so the planet... Corporate media, mainstream media, Hollywood, colleges, universities, schools, they all teach this, the belief system of this scientific materialist cult. You are an animal, nothing more. You're essentially a glorified chimpanzee. And you shouldn't expect too much from life. And the soul is not real. The astral body is not real. Other energetic dimensions and realities are not real. Subtle energy like prana or chi is not real. And you are flesh and bone and nothing else, nothing more than that. This is the belief system of the dominant cult that currently runs the planet. And so spirituality is not a priority during our current era or yuga. And especially in the West, folks that do practice spirituality, their form of spirituality typically is to go to church for a couple hours on Sunday. And that's about it. Maybe they read a few Bible verses in the evening and pray a little bit, perhaps. But that's sort of the be-all, end-all of spirituality in the West for the most part. Of course, there is a small percentage of the population that is awakening and is practicing some form of sadhana or spiritual practice regularly with discipline. But it's a very tiny percentage of the population, as we know, during our current yuga. Now, because of this, spiritual retreats are not a priority. And in fact, most folks are only given 2 or 3 weeks of paid vacation a year. And so with these 2 or 3 weeks of paid vacation, of course, they prioritize spending time with family or perhaps taking a vacation to the beach or what have you, rather than prioritizing something like a spiritual retreat, which is understandable. Where I live here in Chile, most folks are only given 3 weeks of paid vacation a year by law, and most of them spend that time going to the beach, the vast majority. And it's kind of crazy, to tell you the truth. They trade the traffic and noise and chaos and clutter of the city to go to crowded beaches where they have to fight traffic and crowds and deal with noise and chaos and congestion just to spend a few hours sitting, you know, on the sand each day, looking out at the ocean, maybe eating some seafood and drinking some alcohol and all of that. But this is the psychotic nature of our times, the times in which we live. And so spirituality is not prioritized in our current yuga, which is Dwapara Yuga. Really, I think we're still on the cusp in between Kali and Dwapara, just entering Dwapara Yuga, which is an energetic age, but the very beginning of Dwapara, coming out of Kali, is still quite dark. Now, during other yugas, especially Satya Yuga, or the Golden Age, or Enlightened Age, or Spiritual Age, our sadhana, or our spirituality, is the priority. And so society and civilizations sort of revolve around that priority, you see. In our current age, dominated by scientific materialism, spirituality is not a priority. It's way down the list of priorities. The main priority during our current age is to seek out sense pleasures, to make money, accumulate stuff, compete with our neighbors and family and friends in an attempt to feel a sense of superiority, to out-compete our neighbors, our friends, our family, and to win somehow. Of course, you never actually win in that regard. I mean, we can see this in this is quite evident in the social media, Facebook, Instagram, things like this, where everyone is constantly trying to out-compete everyone else, showing themselves in the best light possible, and participating in a form of subtle competition, constantly trying to outdo everyone else, keeping up with the Joneses, as it were. And, well, it is what it is, folks. That's the age in which we live. But at any rate, spirituality is not a priority for most folks in our current age. Something like a spiritual retreat, you know, using some of your vacation time each year to go on a spiritual retreat or meditation retreat is almost unheard of. Now, I was very fortunate, personally, in that when I got serious about my spiritual path in my mid-20s, I was a school teacher at the time, and I had about 3 months of the year off, and so I used a lot of that time to spend in spiritual retreat, mostly at my spiritual teacher's ashram, Roy Eugene Davis, there in the North Georgia Mountains, where I'm from. And so I was very lucky that I lived within an hour drive of his ashram, and so I spent a lot of time there, both at the public retreats as well as doing my own private retreats, where usually I was the only one there on the ground staying there. And I would have time to meet with Mr. Davis privately and meditate on my own and make my own schedule and all that. It was really wonderful. I'm extremely grateful for that opportunity. I estimate that in the 12 or so years that I spent learning from Mr. Davis before his passing, I probably spent about 8 months in retreat, all told, in a 12-year span, in public and private retreats. Now, I understand most folks don't have that privilege, especially, you know, if you live in a developing country. You just don't have time or money or resources enough to do something like that. I'm extremely privileged, having grown up in a sort of lower middle class household in the United States and all of that, and then being a school teacher and having that paid vacation time every year. And so I was extremely fortunate and blessed and lucky and privileged. I understand all of that, especially having lived in a developing country for the last 10 years and having traveled widely in Latin America. I understand how privileged my position was and is. So I'm not naive or ignorant to those factors and variables. However, especially for folks that have the time, that have the resources to do spiritual retreats, many of those folks would rather, again, you know, spend time visiting with friends and family or going on vacations to popular beach destinations and all that. I get it. I understand. But I think most people don't really understand the importance of spiritual retreats, of meditation retreats. Meditation retreats give us an opportunity to completely disconnect from all of our worldly concerns, from all of the mundane matters that we typically have to attend to, all of our duties and responsibilities. We're able to leave all of that behind for a time and really dive deep into the process and practice our sadhana in a way that we normally can't when we're dealing with our normal day-to-day lives and all of our responsibilities, duties, activities, etc. So I'd like to read a selection from one of Roy Eugene Davis's books, With God We Can, that was originally published in 1978, the year before I was born. He was already extremely enlightened before I was even born. So you can just imagine his level or stage of enlightenment that he had when I was studying with him from about 2007 to 2019 or whatever it was. This selection out of this book is chapter 27. It's called The Value of Occasional Seclusion and Spiritual Refreshment. We have stressed the ideal of one being able to live a normal life and still be in tune with God and experience enlightenment. Some persons have a life pattern which calls for an out-of-the-way place where they can devote full attention to either inner work or exacting study and research. The majority of our readers, however, are destined to play out their roles in the mainstream of society, but even they need occasional periods of seclusion for the purpose of spiritual refreshment. It is well known, for instance, that Jesus frequently went off alone to pray and to be infilled with spiritual energy and power. Each of us should have our daily time of study, reflection, and meditation in order to remain centered and in tune with the divine rhythm of the universe. Even though we do this, most of us find that it is useful to have occasional periods of retreat from the normal everyday routine. It is so easy, if we are not aware, to think we are living in harmony when really we have but learned to adjust to external situations by compromising our ideals. Or, without our consciously knowing it, we begin to evidence symptoms of stress and anxiety. Sometimes, we begin to take on the attitudes and viewpoints of others with whom we daily associate. Also, there are times when only a short duration alone will afford us the time, really, to plumb the depths of a philosophical problem which confronts us. Sometimes, we find that if we do not take time for spiritual refreshment and for an adjustment in thinking patterns, life conspires to force us to take a vacation from the routine. A job is terminated, minor illness sets in, an accident happens. When there is a real soul need, the need of the spiritual nature will become dominant. How much better when we learn to consciously and with self-determination learn to so order our lives that we see to inner requirements as well as outer ones. I can recall how my guru used to, Paramahansa Yogananda, my guru used to observe certain disciples and advise according to their best interests. Sometimes, when one was under stress, he would allow the pattern to continue to see how the disciple would respond, to see if an inner strength would prevail. At other times, he would quietly suggest a retreat. Go to the desert, he might say, or the ocean, and meditate on the vastness of God. He knew that nature was a great healer, and that a change of environment was frequently good therapy. He, too, took time to go off alone. When he was in seclusion, no one could reach him. He would relax, meditate, and commune in God consciousness. When he returned to organizational work, he was bright with light and power. It is true that one can retreat at home by intentionally withdrawing from ordinary activities and by being alone to rest and dive deeply into the silence. However, many find that it is not always easy to be truly alone at home, because the home environment triggers memories of previous experiences which relate to the personality realm. This is why a different place is useful, then one is more likely to forget domestic and vocational concerns. A retreat environment should be quiet, and if possible, next to nature. The mountains, desert, seaside, or any natural place will do. Entertainment and diversion should not be easy to come by, and it is best to be alone, or with one or two others who will be quiet and who will not need stimulation and sensory input. Many make the mistake of packing kids, television, pets, and casual friends off to a supposed retreat. They do not leave the old environment behind, they take it with them. Just casual clothes, a few good books, a notebook for writing, and a positive mental attitude is about all one needs on a retreat. The first few days of a retreat will be a time of getting into the spirit of the purpose behind it. One should eat lightly and have a definite schedule of exercise, study, meditation, and free time just to be loose and open. A retreat need not be a time of straining to make progress on the path. It can be a time to be open and aware, letting consciousness unfold and letting useful ideas come forth. After a while, the pace will adjust itself and a deep inner peace will begin to be noticed. Heretofore, repressed energies will begin to circulate, a sense of freedom will naturally occur. We are beginning to be recharged, enthused, and filled with the Spirit, and a larger and more orderly mental perspective begins to be experienced. We begin to know that we can return to our responsibilities with greater understanding and with a sense of being anchored in that which is changeless. We may even see where we have made mistakes in judgment or behavior in the past. We will be renewed through and through. The last few days of the retreat can be a time of quiet reflection concerning our relationship with others, our world, and God. We may feel led to write down new resolutions, creative plans, or outlines which will serve as a guide to more responsive living. A retreat is more useful if we begin to anticipate it before we actually begin it. We begin to look forward to our time alone, and we can immediately enter into our practices with enthusiasm. It is well also to change the eating pattern during a retreat. Fast 1 or 2 days, or take only fruit or vegetable juices to begin. In this way, we can cleanse the body as well as the mind and consciousness. During the retreat, do not write letters to friends, read the daily paper, or talk to chance acquaintances just to pass the time of day. A retreat is a time of renewal and a time to wait upon the Lord. A retreat is a time to talk with God and then listen to what God has to say. Anyone who has traveled has seen packs of tourists as they make their way from one cultural site to another, with their comments and attitudes revealing the fact that they are outsiders just traveling to see how other people live, while seeing through their limited mental conditionings. We do not want to go into seclusion like this. Our retreat time is for surrender, for being open, for relaxing into a higher dimension of consciousness. Occasional retreats from routine activity should be considered just as important as meditation in relationship to one's daily schedule. That is, as we are daily refreshed by meditation, so we can be occasionally refreshed by a retreat experience. It is a matter of priorities and of scheduling the time we need. We will then be more effective in our work and in the reaching of desired goals as a result of becoming more integrated and functional. One who would experience a deepening of the inner life cannot afford to have times alone for communion with God and the subtle energies of nature. One who would experience a deepening of the inner life cannot afford not to have times alone for communion with God and the subtle energies of nature. As to the expense, if we look at surface things, we may conclude that going on retreat will cost money for transportation, maintenance, food, and incidentals. We are not talking about an expensive vacation. We are examining the possibilities of a retreat. A retreat situation should be simple and inexpensive. If minor expense is required, there is still no problem. Everything comes out of our own consciousness. We have but to accept the desired situation as a possibility, then as a reality, then let matters unfold as the desire fulfills itself. There can be no physical universe barriers unless we accept them. To have the body transported from point to point in space is no problem. To have food and shelter is no problem. To arrange for the well-being of others who are dependent upon us is no problem. Problems exist only if we recognize them as such. We can learn to accept solutions instead of being restricted by outer conditions. The world forms about us according to our acceptance of it. This is the natural law of life. When we do what we feel led to do, because it is in our best interest to do so, we demonstrate mastery in time and space. When we remain the victim of circumstances, we are not spiritually free. If one learns no other lesson when planning a retreat than the fact that circumstances change according to one's acceptance of new possibilities, the retreat will have been useful. How long a retreat? Our needs vary. A long weekend can be refreshing. 1 or 2 weeks can be useful on an annual basis. Sometimes, if we take an extended time, we get out of the swing of daily routine and find it a challenge to get back into a creative cycle of action when we return home. What seems right according to individual need is the best way to handle the matter of time and seclusion. The ideal would be a natural flow to the life pattern, with occasions of creative expression and outer involvement being balanced by, now and then, times for reflection and spiritual refreshment. My own schedule works itself out. I may be traveling for 1 or 2 months to speak and be on the front lines of the outer ministry, then return home for several weeks to write, meditate, and receive friends and students who come to visit and share in consciousness. Now and then, when traveling, There will be two or three days when nothing is scheduled. These are occasions of reading, meditation, writing, or relaxing. Immediately following, there may be two or three weeks of intensive work, followed by another short change of pace. Observe nature, see the ebb and flow, the circulation of vital forces, the emergence and the periods of rest from outer expression. There is a lesson here for us to examine and from which to benefit. Another occasion of spiritual refreshment can be to purposely remove ourselves from a routine which may be either a cause of stress or merely too predictable. A walk in the woods, an hour or two boating on a lake, a visit to the museum or art gallery, an evening at the theater or a concert. These can be times for cleansing mind and consciousness and times of uplift and expansion, times for recognition and appreciation. It is in natural participation with life that we find full and joyous expression. Life need not be a struggle. We need not think in terms of competing with our brothers and sisters to survive and get our share of life's bounty. There is provision for all. There is a right place for all. When we are in harmony with the natural order of things, we automatically experience health, prosperity, and peace of mind. It is being small-minded to think in terms of giving in order to get, and to use mental ability to control other people for selfish purposes. It is true that when we are open to the natural flow, we share, but because it is our privilege and our natural expression, not because we are bargaining with life. Energy, blessings, creative works flow through us. The moment we give or express in a creative way, we are prospering. We sometimes think that if we give or express or create now, we will prosper in the future. The future will take care of itself. The moment we are open to the flow, in that moment we are instruments through which God's life is expressing, and this is the moment of freedom. This is why the more we give freely, the more will flow through us. The key is to realize that we are not the source of whatever we share. We only distribute what is ever available. If we think we are the source, we diminish ourselves, and there will be a drain upon our energy. A well which is not fed by a stream of water will soon run dry. If we are not attuned to the energy of the universe, our outer expression will soon become barren. Remember the words of Jesus, "I am the vine, you are the branches." When we are consciously aware of the flow from the Godhead through us, our lives will always bear fruit in due season. When a healthy plant is placed in an ideal environment, the energy of nature flows through the plant, resulting in a vital plant expression. When we are experiencing the ideal mental and spiritual environment, the energy of nature will flow through us and result in personal enrichment and fulfillment. Let us remember then to take time to be alone with God for the purpose of self-analysis and meditation. In this way, we can learn to be ever open to the natural flow. We can then know why God's grace is indeed sufficient. The words of the Master are always welcome and refreshing and uplifting and enlightening. So if you are not prioritizing your spirituality and one or two spiritual retreats every year, I highly recommend to shift some things in your life, shift a few things around so that you have more free time to spend in seclusion in a meditation retreat once or twice a year. Most of my deepest spiritual experiences have happened on spiritual retreats, not only at my spiritual teacher's ashram, but also in other retreat centers, practicing with other masters. But almost all of my really deep, profound, meaningful spiritual experiences have happened on retreat, because during those periods, I'm able to completely disconnect from the personality realm and this thing we call Chris. And I'm able to really focus, really concentrate on my sadhana, and I'm able to dive deep during those periods. Now you might say, well, you live in a retreat center. It must be easy for you. Well, I have a lot of duties and concerns and responsibilities here. I mean, for the past couple of weeks, I've been chopping wood, cutting wood with a chainsaw, and moving firewood around, getting ready for winter. There's always a plethora of things to do here, and we always have groups and friends and people coming in and out, and it's not so easy as you might think. But yes, I do recognize that I have a privileged place in life and all of that. But anyone can do this, I assure you. If you just set aside the time, the resources, you can make time for a spiritual retreat every year, or maybe two. And I highly recommend it. It's very worthwhile, it's very useful, it's very beneficial. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please share it with like-minded souls. Lots of love. Namaste.